Hello, I'm Arnold Hamilton, editor of the Oklahoma Observer.
And I'm Marianne Martin, and this is ObserverCast, your weekly deep dive into Oklahoma politics and policy,
presented by the Mary Lou Lemon Foundation.
With all the pomp and circumstance they could muster, Governor Kevin Stitt, House Speaker Kyle Hilbert, and other state house luminaries gathered recently with students at John W. Rex Charter School in downtown Oklahoma City to watch the governor sign into law Senate Bill 1778, the state's greatest education reform package since, what, the invention of the alphabet? Okay, all right, so it wasn't that over the top, but it was close. To hear Stitt, Hilbert, and company tell it, they've reinvented the education wheel, out-Mississippi-ing Mississippi's miracle. That's not easy to say.
Which is not saying much, but...
Okay, but that ostensibly lifted their Old South elementary students' reading scores out of the nation's basement and on their way to a lifetime of prosperity. The truth, of course, is far more complex than the political sloganeering the elected officials uttered that day. Cheered on, by the way, by students who naturally all wanted one of Governor Stitt's signing pens as souvenirs of the day that they served as props in a state leadership photo op. What that ceremony conveniently forgot is, less than half a century ago, Oklahoma ranked top 20 in education, before the Republican State House takeover led to a systematic rolling back of House Bill 1017's landmark improvements. Improvements, by the way, made possible by the extraordinary leadership of a Republican wheat farmer from Billings, Governor Henry Bellman. What will today's 700,000 public school students be getting from the newly minted Senate Bill 1778? Well, as is all too often the case when the State House goes to meddling in education policy, the devil is in the details. To help us unpack the nitty-gritty details, we invited someone who, as a public ed advocate extraordinaire, knows more about what's happening at 23rd and Lincoln with education policy, and who, as a teacher, actually knows what life's like in today's classrooms. Our dear friend and favorite rabble-rouser, Sandra Valentine. Sandra, it's great to have you. Tell the folks a little bit about what you're doing these days.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate it. Nowadays, it's just a lot of trying to keep up with everything. The legislature, their stuff is happening so fast. Day to day, it's changing. It's hour to hour. I'm looking at the agenda at night and then it changes in the morning. Like, I can't even keep up. I used to be able to do a Sunday night, like call to action for the week. I can't even do that this anymore because things are changing so rapidly. I'm just, trugging along, still teaching third grade and loving every bit of it. But not loving what they're doing to our children and what they're about to do to our second and third graders. So there's my recap.
Well, so where do we start with this? Can you hear me?
Can you guys hear me? Yes, I can hear you.
All right. All of a sudden my sound's gone weird here. So
I don't know. We can hear you.
Okay. Yeah, you sound fabulous. Yeah.
Tell us, give us some background. Like, why are they doing this? Why are they bringing this back? Because I can remember 10 years ago when I had a child with dyslexia, I was extremely nervous about, you know, these reading grades. So, or these reading pieces of legislation. So, what is the backstory here?
Yeah. And tell us, kind of give us the highlights too of what they are doing through this legislation.
So the backstory goes all the way back to George Bush and starting No Child Left Behind, using the NAEP scores to rank us state by state. We're currently ranked 50th, But that is by Class Wallet, that ranking. Class Wallet is doesn't have anything to do with education, but they ranked us 50th. George Bush and his brother Jeb. Well, George Bush gave us No Child Left Behind. Jeb Bush has given us Excel in Ed. And Excel in Ed is a company that provides the let's see, they provide the bills that states can implement so that Excel in Ed makes more money off of the backs of our children. I mean, that's pretty much it. So they're using our
Hashtag imagine that.
Yeah, exactly. They're using child labor to fill their pockets, and every time a child makes a or scores poorly on a test, they make more money because the assessments are made by them. It's just a big circle of money-making scheme, and that's where we are now. We have a few legislators who are in their back pocket who are promoting everything that Excel in Ed has. Now, they might not say the words Excel in Ed, but if you go back to the interim studies, they actually had people from Excel in Ed delivering the interim studies and telling us exactly what they were going to do. So, going all the way back to October, September, somewhere around there. You could go back and listen to the interim studies and find out exactly what they were planning to do to our children. And sure enough, they got what they wanted. There's a third grade retention back on the table. We didn't have that the last 2 or 3 years. Oddly enough, 41 of the current legislators voted to take that away. And now they voted to bring it back to our kids. On top of that, they're going to allow. How gracious of them, right? They're going to allow second graders to take the third grade state test, which makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. So you're going to have 7-year-olds taking a third grade test that is not by any means a reading test, no matter how they say that it is. Nobody is reading. There is no child sitting at a table reading Dick and Jane and somebody on the other side saying, yes, Johnny can read. It is not like that at all. They have children on iPads, Chromebooks, whatever technology the school can afford. Everybody's on a calendar to take the state test. So maybe third grade is taking it this Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then fourth grade takes it Thursday, Friday. The school is on a different atmosphere, different vibe, because everybody's testing, so right? So you have to be quiet in the hallways, lunch has to be a certain way, maybe it's done in the classroom. I've taught third grade for at least 10 years, so I've seen 10 years worth of children taking that state test. It is not what we practice all year long. All year long, we're doing benchmark testing. The state has 13 approved benchmarks. Those range anything from STAR, IXL. Those are the more familiar names. And then come in April, we take the state test. So I always say that we practice football plays all year long just to be in a basketball tournament in April because none of the assessments align to the state test. Nobody has ever seen a state test before, so we never get that information back. We don't know exactly how many questions a student is marked wrong. We don't know. There's nothing. The practice test that is on the state website right now that a second grader or a third grader or fourth or fifth grader can take is the same practice test that we did back in the days of PASS. And PASS would have been our state objectives from a decade ago or more. And so they haven't even updated the practice test that our children are getting on a computer to take. They also So a student is sitting, so pretend I'm 7 years old. I'm sitting in front of a computer. Not only do I have to read a passage that is about 600 words, and that's every passage that I'm reading is about 600 words. And then I have to toggle between screens because I got to go back and forth and try and find the answer in the passage. More than likely, the answer is not in the passage because that would make it a depth of knowledge level one question. Our state test ranges from depth of knowledge one, which is just recall or finding it back in the passage. Then you have a depth of knowledge two, you have a depth of knowledge three, and then you have a depth of knowledge four, which our 7 and 8 year olds are taking. And that is making assumptions and actually bringing like life experience into your passages that you're reading to be able to answer the questions. And all of that is scaffolded in there to where maybe we only have 25% of the test that's on depth of knowledge one. So only 25% of the questions can be found back in the passage. The other 75% are going to come from things like inferencing or background knowledge or things that maybe a 7 year old doesn't even know about. Morphology, because second grade doesn't go that deep into morphology. So it's not a reading test or as simple as some people make it out to be, especially legislators who are passing these kinds of bills.
Well,
That
and
was a lot.
that certainly seems to belie the claims that I've heard from years that, all educators are doing is teaching to the test because there's no test to teach to, right? If I understand you
So,
correctly.
there is no valid test that a teacher gets back. The only thing that a teacher has available to him or her is a blueprint that the state of that the Oklahoma Department of Education puts out. And the blueprint consists of so in ELA, for example, there's eight standards. So in those eight standards, four of or two of them are going to come from the RSA, which is the Reading Sufficiency Act, which it's no longer even called that. But so that's what a third grader has to pass. So the third grader, let's say they're taking a state test that is 60 questions. 10 of those are just going to be filler questions, kind of let's see how well they do, and then maybe we'll implement them into next year's test kind of thing. And then a portion of those are only for the literacy part that's getting graded. So you might think of it as 50 questions, okay, 25 out of 50 is 50%, but that's not at all how this test is graded. Every test question is kind of like a ranking. And so the higher the depth of knowledge, the more points you're going to get. It's very skewed. Every grade level is different. Every subject is different. So let's say in third grade ELA, I need to pass 32 out of the 50 questions. And then maybe in fifth grade math, I have to pass 47 of the 50 questions to be proficient. And yes, some of them are that high. And the raw scores to that do not even come out until a year after the students take a test. So right now, I've been looking for the technical report that has all of this information. It's not even out yet for last year's test. So that's where we are. Like it's a moving target all the time.
So the thing that I think people do not realize, like the general public do not realize, is how much teachers understand assessment, right? I mean, you understand what a valid instrument is to test knowledge. I mean, and you can like seriously get into the weeds. You take that like to the superintendent level, right? Like all of you in the classroom, like deeply have deep knowledge of what assessment really is. And so it's interesting to me because the thought that really occurs to me is like you hear this positioned, you hear these changes in reading as like up against the Mississippi miracle, which just seems like an oxymoron, right? But really, but at the same time, it's like But then when they throw kind of like these monkey wrenches in there, I mean, you have no real way to assess a child's ability to read from the testing that they're given. And
No.
I mean, there's no actionable intelligence that comes out of these assessments.
Right.
There's none. And there's no way to match it against their learning and watch their progress over the course of the year and kind of map that out, right? Like, it's not like when you go to the pediatrician, like we were at the doctor with my 12-year-old and we're able to see like the growth charts, right? And the weight charts. And they have like, like the scattergram, right? Where they see like what the progress is. Like, there's no way to do this because they just simply don't align. And so it really occurs to me is that all of this is designed to fail
Oh, absolutely. It is
because
completely designed to
it's
fail.
designed to show that the system is failing and therefore it does not, it should not exist.
Right, absolutely. We're always going to have a failing group because of the way the state test is administered, the way the federal money that's allotted to the bottom 5%. Even if every child in the state of Oklahoma scored advanced, we would still have a bottom 5% that failed. I mean, that's just the way that the curve is made, and that's the way that the money is allotted to the school districts. Going back to the state test, I mean, you're having kids who have to have the stamina as well to take this test. They've got to be able to sit in a seat for hours at a time and sit through and wait for their friends to finish. I'll give you one example. One year it took my class. I had the corner classroom. The Wi-Fi was always spotty in that area. I tried to relocate my children even before we started the state test. It took us 2.5 hours just to get everybody logged in.
Oh, wow.
So to start, like we even had to call the State Department and ask them for permission if we could take the test the next day, and the State Department declined our request.
Well, I'm just thinking too, like if you're on a device and you're having to flip between windows and there's memory
Yes.
issues with the device itself, it could crash.
Yes. Oh,
Like
yeah, absolutely.
there's so many like literally like technical issues that could go wrong. It's not at all like it was when we were growing up, where you have a little booklet and you flip pages, and then you think of like the working memory that's required of these
Yes.
kids to be able to remember what they just read and then read the question and remember, and like, because I have trouble with that,
Yeah.
as an adult. And so just all these levels of like social and emotional development that just doesn't match with their age
Right.
compared to the technical issues, because I know the schools go out of, their internet goes out all the time, all over the state.
Right. Yeah. And
And
so think of reading constantly 600 words, that's about a page. And you're going to read that story, answer about five or six questions on it that are not on the same screen. And you're right, you're toggling back and forth. And let's say the teacher has, because I know I do this, when we practice reading, we're always using a highlighter and a pencil. We highlight the main idea sentence. We highlight some details. We've read the questions before. There's a pattern of how we answer questions. And you can't practice everything that you have learned or everything that I taught my children. They can't even practice what I taught them on how to look for answers in a passage, because that's not the way the state test is set up. And so you've got the working memory problem, you've got the stamina problem, you've got hunger that might set in, 2.5 hours into it. Going
I mean,
back
just the
to,
fatigue from
yeah.
the attention, the attention span.
Yes.
Like
And
adults can't even do that.
right. And the directions themselves take about 15 minutes. So think about how fast you check out when somebody's talking. So I'm up there giving directions for 15 minutes and I can already see the blank faces. They're just waiting to log in and tap, 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 and then take a nap.
My youngest is just had her testing this week. She's in sixth grade, and it's interesting to me because I remember having discussions with Scott Inman, in 2013, back at kind of the height of too much testing,
Yeah.
and No Child Left Behind and all of that Janet Barisi nonsense. And we were like, okay, so what's this testing? How much testing is it? And the fact is like their entire week around testing is disrupted. There's no other instruction going on. So,
Right, because
like,
the
it's a
building
complete
has to be
disruption.
quiet. Yeah,
Yes,
the
it's a
building
complete
has to be
disruption.
quiet. You can't get on the internet because another class has to use it for state testing.
Can't
I mean,
even call
it's
to the
so many.
classroom, like,
Right, there's no announcements. Teachers are having to use their phone for information. Think about the students that have to take a medicine at a certain time. I mean, that. Even that is stalled sometimes. Lunch is stalled. Going back to the class, and I know I keep going back to the same class, but I had so many issues with that one that we started 2.5 hours later that, every class around us was done, and my poor kids could hear them outside
Yeah.
playing, and mine still had to test. And it was just awful. It was an awful situation. And and we're back at it again. We got away from it for a couple of years, and now we're back at it. And why are we back at it? Because that's what Excel and Ed wants. That's what Jeb Bush has pushed. If you go to the actual website, there is a tab that says Oklahoma, and you can see everything that they have tried to push for Oklahoma and how much of that they have gotten. Like there's a scorecard for Oklahoma on how much we have gotten into Excel and Ed. So where's the child in that scenario?
Right. Where are the what are their learning outcomes, right?
Right.
I mean,
Well,
but
it's you radical teachers, you know, the teachers unions. I mean, you guys, you know, if you weren't failing our kids, we wouldn't have these problems.
I mean, we have 100 school days between the first day of school and spring break, and to get these kids to master every single objective. Some grade levels have more objectives than others. Seventh grade math, eighth grade math, you're going to have 40 something objectives. So divide 40 something by 100 days. I mean, you're giving every standard 2.5 days, and
And
then
that means if you just move
expecting,
on, right? You just move on. So,
you're expecting kids to be proficient on standards that you're giving them 2.5 days to be proficient in. Like all of this is completely set up to make us look to fail. And then I mean the students with disabilities, 91% of our students in Oklahoma, for reasons of them being on an IEP, are failing the state test. I mean, and are they really failing the state test, or is their growth just not showing up on the state test? I would argue that that's what's happening, because in order to qualify for an IEP, you are 2 or more years behind. Like that is the literal definition of qualifying for an IEP. So how do we expect those students to be proficient or advanced on the state test? It's just not possible. And so if you have a school district that is high in a population of students with disabilities, they're automatically starting off with like a, if we start with the A through F, they're automatically starting off with a B. Like they can't get any higher than a B.
it just what occurs to me is like if you have that many students who, you know, academically are not like you're saying, are academically already a year or two behind based on their assessment and evaluation onto into an IEP, then I mean they should be disqualified. They're not qualified respondents, right? According to the
No,
according
they're not.
in
They're
court
not.
according to research methods, they should not
Right.
be qualified respondents because it is not a homogeneous population answering questions.
And so every accommodation that we do for them all year long, none of it is available for the state test, except maybe small group testing.
Yeah, my daughter had extended time, and but she was in a pull-out classroom, so there were fewer distractions, but she still had
Right.
to.
Yeah. And a small classroom is about 5 kids.
And then
So,
still, like, there's still other
yeah.
people in there because you can
Yes.
still see other people, and then you see them finishing, and you think that class is
Exactly.
finished, and so you quit.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's so much mental gymnastics that's happening. The stamina, the sitting upright. I mean, because you can't move around. You can't stand up and, work out your
Well, if you
extra
close your browser
energy.
on accident, like I'm just thinking of like all the things that happen with tech that would totally throw a kid off. You got to call the teacher over, and that's a whole distraction, like. But I can't help but think about this, like set up to fail within the context of, and I'm going to go a slightly different direction, the rope-a-dope that was the social studies standards this year.
What do you want to talk about on the social studies standards? Because I'm
Well,
all
because
in that one
we
too.
thought we were in the clear, right? We thought we had a stand-up guy. We thought we had a
So,
set of standards that kind of went the direction they were supposed to, and suddenly we've got the Bible back in there. And I'm like, okay, here it is. Here it is. There is no good faith reason to do
and he
that.
knew all about this.
I absolutely didn't know about this. So a couple of years ago, when Ryan Walters tried his version of, pulling one over us, I thought when he pushed the standards on us, my immediate reaction was, this guy is trying to set us up for a House Bill 1775 trick, right? So I spent over 150 hours over Christmas break scouring through the standards, because I just had it in my heart that this was going to be a trap for 1775 violations, right? And so I did all my research. I went to the legislators. I had a binder this thick, and I showed it to every receptionist and every legislator that I could. And I said, these are the standards, these are the things that I'm most concerned about. I had the big binder, and then I had like the one pager elevator speech that I was giving everybody.
Quick sidebar, teachers are also very organized. Sorry.
Oh yeah, everything was color coded. It had everything was color
sidebar.
coded. It had its own dividers. I think I here, I still have it.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm not surprised by this.
Okay, look at this. Look. You see that? That's the Oklahoma State Oklahoma School Testing Program. There's my dividers, and there's all the work that I did.
Oh
Like,
my goodness.
I mean, look at how thick this is. Like, and that's what I was hauling to every legislator, and some of them.
There isn't medication for this condition that you have. I'm just I'm
That's
it's
a whole
called
other episode.
being a
Okay, all
creative.
right,
It's
never
called
mind,
being
never
a
mind.
writer, where you just don't have time for this level of organization.
You notice that behind
Gosh.
me is blurred. It's so you can't
You
see
should
how
see our
everything is.
desks. Yeah, both of
Yes.
our desks are like not
Oh,
like
that's funny.
that.
And
I'm not
so,
apol I don't apologize, but yeah.
oh, you're fine. I was going to every state school board meeting, and so everything was trucking along. Public comment came on. I had so many people. I had over 400 people across Oklahoma. I had professors. I had legislators. I had tribal leaders. My inbox was so busy during that time because I was letting everybody know, hey, this is what's coming up. This is what you need to say public comment on if you believe the same way I do, right? And so I was very popular during that time. And then we came across a school board meeting that happened, and I even made a comment that day. I said, "Hey, wait a minute, the handouts are not available on the website. There's always handouts that you can look at before a state school board meeting." And I couldn't find them. I couldn't find them. And something in me said, I need to screenshot this. And so I screenshot where there was no handouts on the day of the meeting. Well, come to find out,
Like the agenda for the board meeting? Okay.
And so, well, come to find out, there was some trickery that happened. The board members did not realize what they were voting on. The next day is when I saw the handouts and realized that things had changed. And so I am on the phone trying to get a hold of anybody that I can. Like, guys, we really, I'd spent 150 hours and now none of that applies. Now I'm, maybe I'm spending another 150 hours. I don't know, but now I need help because I already know all the work that I put in and now it's a totally different direction and they just approved this. And I can't believe, this trickery that has happened. Fast forward a couple of months, we end up in a lawsuit. I am committed to this lawsuit. I am saying, this is the hill that I'm going to die on. I happen to have the only screenshot available that showed that there was no handouts available 24 hours before the state board meeting. And
Yeah,
so
the trade procedure, baby, is going to get you.
that's how we ended up winning the lawsuit. We didn't win because of separation of church and state. We won because they were not given 24 hours in advance. And had I not had that screenshot, I don't know. I mean, we could have had,
So
the 80 something Bible stories and, the more, the 2020 election was rigged and COVID happened in a Chinese lab and, things like that. And then my daughter would have to take a civics test on somebody's version of Christianity. And so that's why I was so invested in it.
Okay, so it makes me wonder, like, did the House or Senate suspend rules this year or rewrite the House rules where they do not have to post agendas 24 hours in advance?
Provenzano had a bill, and so it has to be posted 24 hours in advance, and it has to online and on the door.
Okay. So, but I'm thinking too for like the legislative agendas, right? Like
Oh.
the floor calendar for the day.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah.
I'm not sure about that one,
I'm just
but
curious because I mean
oh yeah, because they're
they've been
changing
playing fast
things.
and loose with this, and so it's like you have
Oh
no
yeah.
idea what's coming up, you know? I mean, it's the same
Yeah.
administrative problem. I mean, especially with like committees where you could actually like possibly go up and speak, or you can, you know,
Yes.
the much more like higher up on the funnel before it actually gets to the floor.
Yes.
But just all these ways that they keep the public, from engaging with these bills because you
Right.
don't know what's going to come up.
Right. Right. I mean, and so we were taking days off because we knew that, state school board meetings were on a particular day.
Yeah.
We would take that day off. But if you don't know or they remove something and it just messes with everybody's schedule, and it's a horrible way to conduct business. It's
Well, I
not,
mean, it's poor government.
sneaky.
It's
Yeah.
poor government, you know? I mean, and just like the idea of like lack of transparency, lack of
Right.
accountability, because they're not, following open records laws and procedure
Right.
laws. But I mean, but it serves a purpose, right? It
Yes.
absolutely serves a purpose. It disenfranchises, the citizenry because we cannot engage and we do not know what we're voting for or what we're voting on.
Right.
So, yeah. And what are you afraid of, Speaker Hickey?
Well, then we fast forward to the new superintendent, and some, I would call it shady stuff happens again. They do make a point to say that the agenda was posted 24 hours in advance. So I will give them credit for that because that's how they lost the last lawsuit. But what they voted on is not what the public was doing public comment on. And so
Okay.
again, we were in a situation where we did not know what they were voting on. And the only way you would have known is if you would have clicked on the agenda. And how many people do you know click on the agenda and print out the handouts or even look at the handouts? The handouts for that month were over 500 pages long. Nobody's going to look through all of that. I mean, it took me the next day to figure it out, but still, I was in a situation where I was highly invested in those social studies standards, and even I was bamboozled. So, yeah. I love your face right now.
Well,
Suck.
as parents and as taxpayers, in my case, grandparents,
Me too.
I'm trying to figure out, how you get the ship turned around, amidst all the fol-de-rol and the carrying on, and oh, we've done this great thing and we're sinking all this new money in this year, and we're gonna give these kids help and we're gonna get them to where they need to be. And in 5 years from now, we're gonna be having the same conversations over again, most likely, if not sooner.
Right.
Sooner maybe, as parents, suddenly discover that their children are being held back against their will. What does it take for people to begin to understand that, they're being played by a group that's anti-public ed, that wants to steer everything into for-profit or religious education or a combination thereof, and that they're not that they've set this system up to fail.
Oh yeah,
So, I
this
mean,
was
how
a
do you,
plan.
yeah, but how do you? Most folks are working hard and, maybe more than one job, and they're trying to keep food on the table and make sure, hey, Johnny, did you do your homework like you're supposed to, or what,
Right.
it's, trying to keep up then with this sort of nefariousness. I don't know how people do it. And they're
Yeah,
not, and none of us are doing very well, apparently, because this stuff just keep, this is wash, rinse, and repeat.
yes, I consider myself very savvy on this subject, and I cannot keep up this year. This is the first year that, like I said, I have not been able to do a Sunday night update because things are happening so fast, and it's sad that we're relying on, I'm still relying on the same people, to give me the information. People are relying on me to give out information, but I am drowning. I can't keep up. I mean, they have really upped their game this year to make it to where we're getting shot by all sides, by all things. I mean, the state questions are at us, the Medicaid expansion is at us, the right minimum wage is at us. I mean, they're just attacking us from every possible angle at the same time. And if I'm only dealing in education, I don't know what's happening in the health world or with the judicial system or prisons, all of that. They're just attacking us from everywhere, and it's exhausting. There's some days where I'll sleep 13 hours and then catch up and go hardcore again. But yeah, I mean, I too cannot wait for this session to end, but at the same time, I'm like, they're gonna pack us full of everything. And the only thing that has saved me is I watched the interim studies. So I knew what was coming up the pipelines. I knew Excel and Ed was in all of our business because they had people in so many interim studies from different representatives and senators that it was the writing on the wall. And so I started talking about this since September and October of last year. And it takes people a while to catch up, and they've got to see it with their own eyes. And now it's like, see, I was trying to prepare you for this. But even I'm caught with the rug from under my feet, and I knew this stuff was coming. So I can only imagine what somebody else is going through, really feeling the pressure, because my mind is already a year or two from now. And everybody else is like living in the day-to-day kind of situation.
So I wonder if they sense that that their time might be drawing nigh, that they need to strike while they can, and so they've accelerated the pace this year, because the pendulum swings in politics, it always
Right.
does, and
Right.
they may think this is our chance to do it, and if we don't do it now, we're not gonna do
Right.
it.
I mean, look around the country at all the things that are happening in places that are getting their first Democratic governor, mayor, councilman, whatever. And so yeah, Oklahomans are the legislature is pretty scared. That's why they want to hurry up and finish this session so they can start collecting that big money, right? Because that's how they can that's the only way they can collect it is when session is over.
Well, one of the things that I was struck as I was reading through the particulars of the reading standards, they were making a big production about what they claimed they were adding $26 million more dollars to literacy instruction in public schools, and a $43 million Strong Readers Act fund, and blah blah blah, $100 million more for a $2,000 increase for teachers, which, as I understand, of course, most teachers aren't under the minimum anyway, but they're not being paid the minimum. But now I'm reading and hearing from people that actually the local districts are going to end up footing the bill on that thing, that it's not, being taken care of at the state level. But that they dedicated supposedly $5 million to expand a team of literacy coaches at the State Department. And I'm thinking, $5 million is like, $5 million for that is like, the equivalent of buying a bag of burgers at Brahms. I mean, that's just nothing. I mean, why would anybody think that's,
I mean, that's just like salaries and like, yeah.
why would anybody think that's going to sell? And it's only what, originally for like 20 positions, and we have
Yes.
500 plus public school districts and 700,000 students.
Absolutely.
Yeah, boy, that's attacking the problem.
When you talk about the Mississippi miracle, they forget to say that there was an initial investment of $100 million right off the bat for professional development, for all the things that needed to happen before we even started looking at, and this is for years before they even started talking about retention or talking about interventions. They invested that money to train their teachers. And so they're half of our size and they invested $100 million, and our legislators are bragging about 26 million or 5 million or whatever the number is. They had literacy coaches that blew our number out of the water. I mean, we're sitting at 12, I think, right now, currently. And they
In
had,
total.
yes, total for the entire state of Oklahoma. Yes. And so the 5 million will bring it up to maybe 20 positions, maybe. And then Mississippi had about 76. And so half of our size. And so yeah, bragging about 12. Or jumping from 12 literacy coaches to about 20 for 700,000 students. I mean, the math ain't mathing.
I wonder, so it makes me wonder if these positions aren't going to be more like, liaisons with the Excel in Ed of the world, the Jeb Bush Foundations of the world. And then they become contractors who are brought in, like some other backdoor way to get these professionals into the state, infiltrate the state, since they're simply just not funding it with the State Department of Education. Because it's, I mean, it's the fix is in, I feel like, right?
So, oh, bless you. So going to that scenario that you just brought up, we are looking at a universal screener. And the universal screener would be the benchmark that kids take throughout the school year that teachers can see real live actual data from. Once they finish the test, I know exactly how my children scored. And then from there, I can adjust my lessons and adjust what I need individually for each child, as opposed to the state test where you don't get any of that data in a timely manner. But they want to go from, I believe it's 13 approved assessments that we have right now to just one. And they say that there's going to be a bidding process. And they say that these companies are going to have to work for their for the win, right? But I'm telling you right now, I guarantee you Amira is going to be the one on top. And Amira, if you don't know what that is, it is an AI program.
I was
So
waiting for you to say AI. I was about to ask, oh, when does AI factor into this? I was waiting for it.
it's a child in a headset that is reading. And so think of all the children in Oklahoma. Do they all have the same accent? Do they all have the same pronunciations? Do they all speak the same language? No. But an AI is going to assess them and then teach them according to their level. So Guymon has 40 something languages.
Yep.
I don't know how that's going to work. Even a child that has a thick accent or a child who has speech development issues, it's going to count things wrong that maybe they're saying correctly. I know one of my big, I have a student right now who keeps saying whiff instead of whiff. Well, come to find out, it's a dialect thing. His mom is from Africa, and so that's how she pronounces it. So that's how he hears it all the time. And as much as I try to say it's whiff, and when you read it in a story, it's whiff. He is going to say whiff every single time. So this Amira will probably fail him on whiff, which is a common word, and probably bring him down to, he's never, not never, but he's going to have a hard time passing something that is so simple that is a dialect thing from home. Like I can't change those things. Well, I take that back. You can if the teacher goes back to listen to it and fixes it, but who has that time, right? If I'm sitting in a class of 25 students and they're all missing different things and I have to listen to the AI report,
What's the point of AI
what's
if
the
you have to go
point,
back and fix?
right? And not to mention, every child needs a working set of headphones. So even in my school, I do not have a working set of headphones for every child in my class. Like there's just so many problems that are unforeseen. But I guarantee you, you can mark my words, bet me $100, whatever. Amira is going to be the company that we use. And so that's going to be another backdoor way. All of that to say that.
It's election year in
Yeah.
Oklahoma, folks.
Yeah.
So who's going to benefit from that? Who's going to go to work? Who made the decision as part of this process? Who's going to go to work for them? Or, there's some quid pro quo coming on this thing.
How many people are running on the Republican side for state superintendent?
A bunch.
Right, probably six, I think, right now. Six, I think is what the number is. How many of those do you think XL and Ed already invested in?
You've looked at it. I can tell by the look
I've
on your
looked
face.
at it,
Okay, do
absolutely.
tell.
I have looked at the website. I have looked at who has been on their podcasts. I have looked at their money. So Adam Pugh, the big runner right now, is he's deep on the podcast. He is even Kyle Hilbert mentioned XL and Ed that he met with them and bragged about working with them, and that's how he came up with the legislation. It's in the non-doc article. I mean, he literally quotes XL and Ed. So our top guys are all in their back pocket.
Of course. No, I
And
mean,
so
because they have
I
the
mean,
money, you know? I mean,
yeah.
they have the money. They are not the Sandra Valentines of the world,
They're
who one woman army, like they have the deep pockets. And so, I'm just thinking, sorry, I'm just thinking of like how this compares to say how our Medicaid program was completely overhauled because of
Oh,
private,
yeah.
because of commercial interests, and now we're seeing what's happened there, right? I was just looking at OSMA's response to the Attorney General's audit call for
I
that.
just read that,
Yeah,
yeah,
and so
earlier.
that, and just like this, in this infiltration of third party vendors and third party interests with very, very, very deep pockets and very deep self interests in undermining public education.
I used to have really good conversations with Ryan Walters, and so much so
Wait,
that
whoa,
he
whoa, wait just a minute. Would you repeat that slowly to make sure
I used to have really great conversations with Ryan Walters, so much so that he was seemed invested in Jade and would ask her, what are you learning in school? What do you want for Christmas? I mean, we had really good conversations, and I can specifically name the day that I told him, if you do this, the kids that you are attacking the most are the SPED kids. And you, as a SPED teacher, somebody who has special education on your Oklahoma teacher's license, you're attacking the same kids that you vowed to protect. And the very next day, it was like an automatic switch on him. And I can pinpoint it exactly. And he got caught up in the money. Like, I don't know. There's some people that will get caught up in the money, and then there's some people that will get caught up in the justice, and we just see where people land, and that's all we really have. I mean, all you have is your character and your word, right?
You know what? I'm going to say, unlike Ryan Walters, the rest of this bunch running for state superintendent, they're not coming from left field. They're not a surprise. Toni Hessenbeck is not a surprise. The minute she switched parties to become Republican to win her seat, the anti-trans bills that she's run. Adam Pugh was the OG author of work requirements for Medicaid. Like they have been who they are since they have been in office. And so it's just like on a larger scale. And I take it back to a friend of mine. A good friend of mine was a teacher with Teach for America in Camden, New Jersey. And so she saw like the front lines of like education reform, right? Reform with air quotes. And I will never forget what she said. She was like, there is profit in failure. And that's exactly what's happening here. That's exactly what's happening.
Yeah, because if a child fails, okay, who are we going to blame? The teacher, right? So then the teacher has to go to professional development to become a better
And
teacher.
that's another vendor.
Yes, that's another vendor. The teacher, even before the teacher becomes a teacher, there's so many tests that we have to pass. Where do those tests come from? It's all part of the same package. It's a circular package that we are just. Money is going from here to here to here to here, and they're counting on 7 and 8 year olds to fill their pockets.
Yep.
Like child
Well, right
labor.
now it's
I call it child
compulsory.
labor.
I mean, right now it's compulsory, right? Like I remember when my daughter graduated high school last year, and she's like, "It's my last day of compulsory education," right? Like you have, millions of Americans who are like compelled to go to school, and therefore they are like prone, they're sitting there prone to the money making schemes. So.
Yeah, I mean, I think about it all the time. I am in a room with four walls and, 20 students, and I'm with them 6, 7, 8 hours a day for 180 days a year. And who's making the money? No matter how much I pour and invest, yeah, no matter how much I
It's
pour and invest and give of my time and everything, it is not me. I want them to be successful taxpayers. I mean, that's the other part I don't get. Don't Republicans want taxpayers? Like, wouldn't you want me to do the best of my abilities so that I can produce a taxpayer that's going to invest a whole lot of money back into the system? Like, I don't understand that either. So.
Well, that's another episode. So,
all right. So what do we the little people do?
You are not
Did
little.
we just,
I am 4'10".
You
I'm
haven't seen me
little.
get on the scales, but lately, but at any rate, in all seriousness, I mean, are we just gonna watch it steamroll the
no,
whole operation and in generations of Oklahoma students?
We have options at the ballot box, and the first option will happen in June. So we have, oh man, Erica had a countdown to how many days we have. I'm gonna get it wrong, but maybe about 50 days before we vote for the first time.
A little more
and
than
then,
that, I think.
Yeah. So June is very, very important. I mean, that's where we're going to see the front runners on the state superintendent side. And then August will be the next important month, and followed by November. But we have choices, and we have great choices. Craig McVey is the person that I'm 1000% behind. There's seven candidates that I'm helping with an education platform. Use your time and your talent and whatever. I don't have the money to invest in seven candidates, but I have a brain that I can share, some, you know, knowledge of the state test and report cards and, what's happening in the classroom. And so that's how I'm choosing to support my candidates. And yeah, and so seven of them, were deeply invested in an education plan that hopefully moves Oklahoma forward.
Well, Sandra, as always, it's great to talk to you. I don't think there's anyone more knowledgeable or engaged than you are right now in education in the state of Oklahoma. So thank you so much for all the work. Like, oh my gosh, all the work
you
that you
are so sweet. It's four letters. It's called ADHD.
So you're like hyper focusing. Is
yes.
that what you're doing? Yeah, you're going to hyper focus. I get that.
Yes,
I get that. But, still so very grateful. So glad you could spend the time with us. I'm just thinking, like, you have like the most beautiful grandchildren, and you're so.
Oh,
engaged.
Thank you. Aww.
And I'm like, you just do all the things. And so it's such a pleasure to know you and to talk to you. But we will definitely talk about this again. And maybe yeah. one day we'll have some good things to talk about.
Yes, yes, like, definitely. Yes.
So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Have the best
thank
night.
You so
yeah,
much.
We will
you
talk
too.
Again.
Thank you for listening to this episode of ObserverCast. If you like what you hear, please tell your friends about us and share our episodes far and wide on social media. If you're interested in sponsoring ObserverCast, please give Arnold Hamilton a call at 405-478-8700 or drop him an email at ahamilton@okobserver.org. You can also support ObserverCast with a tax-deductible donation to the Oklahoma Observer Democracy Foundation, whose mission is to help create a better, more informed Oklahoma. And to help keep us on the air, visit okobserver.org and click on the donate button on the upper right side of the homepage. We also urge you to subscribe to the Oklahoma Observer, now in its 55th year of comforting the afflicted and afflicting the comfortable. We have a special digital subscription rate for ObserverCast listeners, only $1.99 a month for the first year. That's 50% off the usual rate for monthly digital subscribers. Just use the coupon code ObserverCast when checking out to get the discount rate. And finally, we want to thank Jared Deck for the music you're listening to in the background here. He's not just a resident of Norman anymore. He is now the Oklahoma State Representative for House District 44. Congratulations, Representative Deck. We're so proud of you. But you can still download his albums at iTunes and learn more, including dates for any upcoming performances at jareddeckmusic.com.